call the meeting to order. First item of business, we do need to approve the minutes dated February 1st. Representative Torkelson moves the minutes for February 1st. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So, members, today, pulling up the Green Acres bills and the discussions, I think the work up to this point has been, I think it's been very productive. We did slow this thing down quite a bit, substantially, by the recommendations of not only the author but others. And we took all the testimony last Tuesday. On Tuesday, we had our working group yesterday, and my plan was we're going to hear this and move it out today. After receiving feedback from my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, what I would like to propose, and visiting with Representative Eakin and others, what we would like to propose is that we would bring up the Lemire bill. That's the one we're going to be working off of, and bring up the delete alls and go through the other amendments and get the bill in the shape that was discussed upon yesterday, but not to move it out of committee today. And the reason is because we want to make sure that people are comfortable with the language that we have in place. That would give us a little more time over the weekend and whatnot and pick it up on Tuesday. And if there's any additional amendments or concerns or whatever, then those can be addressed. There's two other bills as well that are on this. One's a complete repeal that was similar to the bill that we're going to be working off of before the amendments, and Representative Kiffmeyer's is similar, although it has a study. Talking to those authors, what we're going to do is we're not going to move those out either. I'm going to make the motion and hold those over for possible inclusion, so we still have them in the Ag Committee. Okay. So again, the intent will be to work off of the one bill here today, House File 12, Representative Lemire's bill. Bring the amendments that we discussed, the working group proposals and stuff, bring those forward. Hope if they pass, bring them on so we can get the bill as, I guess, the intent of the authors and the others that have been involved. But again, we're not going to move the bill out today. That way we can all have some time to digest it, and then we'll pick it up back on Tuesday, because I know this has been some controversy around this bill over the last few years, and we do not want to slam this thing through. We want to make sure people are heard, and we want to get it in the best shape we possibly can. I think everybody has the same goals in mind. So, Mr. Minority Leader, if you will, of the committee, yeah. Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank you very much for accommodating our members' concerns on this issue. And it is a very controversial and complicated piece of legislation as well, with a lot of moving parts. So we want to make sure that what changes are being made are being done right in a thoughtful way. And our main concern was just that we have the time to thoughtfully digest it, and to if we're offering amendments, we don't want to be doing it on the fly. So again, we do very much appreciate your willingness to accommodate us, Mr. Chair.
Fantastic. Thank you. We do have Mr. Sullivan went out to get the delete all amendments, because when we printed them off, they printed off. It didn't print off correctly. So he is out getting the delete all amendments. So would everybody feel comfortable, while we're waiting for Mr. Sullivan, if we ask the author of the bill to go up front, and we could at least take up the amendment that we're going to be discussing, but that way we could get it in the shape that the author would like to start off with, and we could begin to proceed while we're waiting for Mr. Sullivan. Would that be okay? All right, so I would ask Representative Lemire to come up, and you do serve on the committee there, sir, so if you would like to go ahead and make the motion to bring the bill in front of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I move House File 12 and recommend it to pass and be referred to the Tax Committee.
Okay. So we do have the bill before us, and with that, Representative Lemire, after the work groups and everything, you did have a delete-all. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have a delete-all amendment before you to House File 12. I believe it'll be DE1.
The DE1 amendment?
And I would like to move the amendment to get the bill in its proper form.
All right. So, and does everybody have, is this the amendment that Mr. Sullivan went to get? So would the members be okay if we went ahead and voted on this to get the bill in the format the author is requesting? And then we'll be sure to make sure everybody has a copy. So any opposition to that? All right, so the motion is to move the DE1 amendment. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right, Representative Lemire, then I believe there's some technical changes as well.
Yes.
So, well, I tell you what, instead of going there, how about you go ahead and describe your bill, if you would, please, to this point, because we do have a number of amendments. How about we go ahead and do that, discuss what got us to this point, if you would, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And first of all, I'd like to say thank you for allowing me to have this hearing today on House File 12. And I'd also like to say thank you to Representative Eakin and his caucus, as well as the members of my own caucus, for sharing their concerns and their views in the creation of this legislation. I would also like to say thank you to the farmers and the representatives from the farming organizations and the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers, as well as the Department of Revenue, for coming to our meetings and sharing with us their concerns and their vision, and for supporting this legislation. And also to Mr. Hines, wherever you're at, thank you for taking all my questions and helping me out with the creation of this legislation. What House File 12 does is it modifies the requirements for enrolling in the Rural Preserve Program. It eliminates the requirement for the conservation plan, and it also eliminates the requirement for a covenant agreement. So the Rural Preserve Program pretty much operates exactly like the Green Acres Program. It allows 2A and 2B land removed from the Green Acres after 2008 changes to be reinstated to the program at the owner's request. It also requires the Commissioner of Revenue to develop a new methodology for valuing tillable and non-tillable acreage enrolled in the Green Acres Program and also in the Rural Preserve Program in consultation with the Department of Applied Economics at the University of Minnesota and with the major farm groups. It requires the Commissioner to make a report to the legislature describing the new methodology prior to February 15, 2012. I would also like to add that this legislation, it falls in line with the issues that were brought forth by the Office of the Legislator's Auditor, and I feel it falls in line with their concerns.
So, does everybody have a copy of the DE1? Pardon me? Oh, gotcha. Okay. So, thank you, Representative Lemire. We're still waiting for the other copies coming in. Do you have a copy of that technical amendment? Do the members have this in front of them, or are they pulling that as well? It would be the A4. Yes, Representative Porpoise.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, but we had a DE1 in our packet, and we've just received another DE1.
Yes.
Is there a difference between the two, and how do we identify one from the other?
Yes. Representative Torkelson, the one that was just handed out will be the one that we're working off of. And in the opening comments, when they printed off the initial one, when it printed off, it didn't print off correctly. And so Mr. Hines and Mr. Sullivan ran up to get the one that is printed correctly, and so that's the one that was just handled out.
Mm-hmm. So the one we received originally ended at 1.19, yes. And the new one goes all the way to 1.25.
That is correct.
Just to make sure everybody has the right piece of paper in their hands.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
Would it be all right if I got one on?
No, no, I'm just teasing. Representative Lemire, could we make sure that Representative Lemire has the appropriate one as well?
Thank you.
There you are.
So. Okay. So do you have? Okay.
We have a
So, does that Representative Ward?
Mr. Chair, an easy, thank you, Mr. Chair. An easy way to members to tell which one is which is the initial one in our packet was cut off on page 2, and the newest one is in whole on page 2.
That is correct. Yes, and that's I believe that's what Representative Torkelson said as well, and Representative Morrow, he does concur, I believe. Yes. So, all right. So, Representative Lemire.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to, at this time, could I make an oral amendment to my amendment?
Yes, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, on line 1.14, it says 4, there are no delinquent property taxes on the land, and it's crossed out. I'd like to uncross that line out.
Okay.
Put a 2 in front of there, and then on 1.15, change that 2 to a 3.
Okay, so Representative Lemire, to the DE1 amendment, it is a technical change here, and Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lemire, I was just going to point out that
please speak to your microphone, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Lemire, I was just going to point out that the A4 amendment does incorporate this change that Representative Lemire is proposing orally now, so you should either take the A4 or the oral amendments,
okay.
Not both.
How about, let's take, all right, to that point, I'm going to ask Representative Lemire that you withdraw your oral motion.
I'll withdraw my motion, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. What's going around right now is the A4 amendment. And basically, this speaks to what Representative Lemire is talked to. So, would you like to move the A4 amendment?
I would move, Mr. Chair.
All right. So, everybody have a copy of the A4 amendment. So, we're getting close. And Representative Lemire, would you like to speak to it as it's being passed out? Or Mr. Hines, would you like to speak to
could
this?
Could I defer, Mr. Chair, could I defer to Mr. Hines?
Yes, Mr. Hines, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Lemire, the A4 amendment really does three things. The first lines 1.3 to 1.5 simply reinstate some stricken language that should not have been taken out originally, which is a requirement that there be no delinquent property taxes on the land. So that would still be part of the law. Line 1.6 of the amendment is just puts the word tillable in tillable and non-tillable land in the study of the valuation methods. And finally, lines 1.7 to 1.10, I guess, put in a new repealer section, which is just repealing a definition of the conservation management plan that's no longer needed.
Okay.
So all very technical.
Okay. Any questions, members? To the A4 amendment. Any discussion? All right, to the A4 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So, members, what I'd like to do next is bring up the A1 amendment. Does everybody have that one in your packet? Okay, good. So the A1 amendment, I would like, I'm looking out into the crowd as well. I think I'm going to be asking some additional questions on this. I'm going to move the A1 amendment. And what this does is we had conversations in great lengths about the bill that is before us now. It brings the time frame down to 3 years. Everybody that was enrolled prior has that three-year clawback, if you will. What this amendment would do is it would, for anything moving forward, it would extend that to 5 years. Anything new that's being rolled into the program would extend that to 5 years, because what I would like to do is, if I could, call on Representative Hansen. Some of the points that you made in the working group, I'd like you to bring those up once again, if you would, please.
Sure, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. With removing the covenant, one of the concerns some of us have is that there could be unintended consequences in terms of what happens with the changes for green acres and ag preserves, that speculation could occur that people could be getting into the land business who the intent is not to be protecting the farmland but for banking that land, and that you could have so that was the covenant was being looking forward. What we're doing here in what the chair mentioned in A1 is, after this point, having a greater clawback to recover the difference in the taxes, so that there's a disincentive for that speculation, that you still have people that are having to be homesteaded in order to enroll in the program, but you have a disincentive for them to sell off and subdivide. So the goal here is, with a greater clawback, and we don't want to be changing things for the folks that are in now, you know, that you'd be having the 3 years be 3 years now, but for folks who are enrolling after this point, new folks that are coming in, they would know up front that it's going to be 5 years, so they're making that decision in there going forward. So that's kind of the goal that we talked about. I'm concerned that we want to make sure that if we are looking at this for protecting farmlands and development, keeping farmers on the land, that's where we're going, rather than having unintended consequences where people may buy the land, hold it, dump it, use that very high land profit, then to have other land purchases elsewhere and continue that sprawl activity. So that's the purpose behind the A1.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Bruce Anderson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I agree with this, and it's the form that it is right now. My question is, I had someone ask me, what happens to the farmer who wants to leave it to his son or his daughter and son-in-law? Does that then, we're leaving the land there, now it's going to be a new owner? I mean, they're going to eventually, Dad's going to step out of the picture, or Grandpa's going to step, whoever the case is, but it's relatives. Will that new owner, once it's been finalized, will he then be subjected to the 5-year, or will he be subjected to, because it's a grandfather-type situation, will he still be on the 3-year program?
Representative Hansen, would you like to field that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. Our intent here is, many times properties are dealt with estates or tenants in common. I know from my own experience where land is owned tenants in common, and relatives may change and come and go, and you have willing and estate type of activity. The intent here was that would, with the homestead, that would still be required to be at the status quo. Now, I would check with House Research Council, who I think heard our intent, to see if we've got it written clearly, to make sure our intent is understood and clear in the statute on the point going forward.
Would you like to comment on that, please?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, I did draft it with the words originally enrolled prior to January 1, 2011, to try to address that point. So that is the intention. I think if the assessors or the Department of Revenue feels that's not sufficient, they may want to say so, but that certainly was the intention, and that's why the word originally enrolled is used in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Would it help to bring someone from the department down to comment on that? Seeing heads shaking yes. Yeah. So, and once again, could you just please state your name for the record, who you represent, and go for
Mr. Chair, my name is John Hagen. I'm the director of the Property Tax Division with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And I'm trying to follow along, and I'm not doing it particularly well. Could we have some time to look at it and get back to you on when you meet again Tuesday to make sure that I understand the intent and what you're trying to achieve, and I could certainly go back, talk to our legal staff, and make sure that it is, in fact, doing exactly what you want it to do. So. Right.
Thank you. Yes, I see heads nodding as well. Okay. So, yes, that's fine. Thank you. We have Representative Szymanski.
Thank you for recognizing me, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
At least you didn't call me Bob.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That's my brother.
Gotcha.
The question, probably for Representative Hansen, in this amendment, an example, I can only describe it by example, I think, but if a farmer owned 80 acres and he's got two building eligibilities and he sold off one building eligibility off of that 80, does he lose the green acres benefit on the entire parcel or just the fractional part that sold off? That would be my question.
Is that a question to Representative Hansen? Do you feel comfortable taking that, Representative Hansen, or that'd be better directed elsewhere?
Mr. Chair, that may be better directed to the implementers of it, but I would think some of the question would be the size of the parcel being sold off.
So,
and whether it's got buildings and improvements on it. I think that might be part of the question, but I would defer to the assessors on practical implementation of what it would do. My intent here is to try to make sure that we're keeping family farmers with the land, and that trying to have unintended consequences can go many ways, and so trying to reduce unintended consequences so that we can meet the goals of ag land preservation and keeping farmers on the land.
Okay. Representative Szymanski, is that where you're heading as well, your intent as well?
Yes. But if at some point during this discussion, if we could hear, further clarification on that, my question.
Okay. Well, what I would like to do is address that now. If we could bring someone from the assessors, the experts out there, and if someone who represents the assessors, if you'd be willing to come down and just field that question from a practical sense, and then I have a follow-up question as well. So please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tom Dibbing. I'm the Houston County Assessor and a member of MAAL. Okay. And I guess maybe if you would repeat the question. I think I got most of it, but repeat the question.
Okay.
So
Representative Szymanski.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the question is, if a farmer has an 80-acre parcel enrolled in green acres and he sells off a building eligibility off of that parcel, would he lose the green acres and have the clawback provision on the entire parcel or just on the fraction that was sold off?
We have, the way we've been administrating it is we just do it on the portion that's sold, and he can retain remain in the program on the balance of the property that he owns.
And Representative Szymanski, I'm seeing many heads nod as well in agreement that would be the intent from many members as well. The question that I have, since you're up here as well, the date that we have here is enrolled prior to January 1st of 2011. That date, that was a starting point. Do you have any concerns with that date? Do you have any recommendations from an assessor's point of view?
Mr. Chair, members, that's kind of what we were discussing at the point, because we do have this May 1st date to enter into the program, and maybe we need to maybe look at that a little bit.
Okay.
And whether the January 1st is a good date or the May 1st.
Okay. So then I have a request, if you would please, if your group could be discussing this, and if you have recommendations yet today, if you could bring those. If not, I'd like to have you back on Tuesday.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure. Sir.
All right. Thank you so much. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and that was my concern when I saw January 1st, too, since we're at February 3rd now. is we don't want anybody caught in between land, and if the assessors can provide us with their best on-the-ground understanding of what would work, that would be very helpful.
Okay, very well. Thank you. So any other discussion on that? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Paul Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have some concerns about the five-year clawback. We talked about this yesterday. I understand the rationale for doing it, but I'd remind the committee that this whole time frame with Rural Preserve has been kind of a moving target. First, it was a 10-year covenant, then 8 years. Now we're talking five. There's been talk of putting the payback down to three. So we need to make a decision that's best for all. In the essence of simplicity, I would encourage keeping this program the same as Green Acres, staying with a three-year payback. And the one thing I would add is that whatever number we have is the payback, we're really talking about one additional year, because if I bought a piece of land today and we had the five-year payback and I kept that land for 5 years and then sold it, I'd have no advantage with Rural Preserve, because I'd have to pay back the entire five-year back taxes on it. So I'd really have to hold that land for 6 years or longer to have any benefit from the Rural Preserve. So I think whatever number we arrive at, it's really 1 year longer than the number that we have in statute. So I would just like the members to keep that in mind. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Hines.
Representative Hamilton, I just wanted to make a point that maybe is a little lost in this discussion, is that the A1 amendment, is the way it's drafted, is the five-year clawback would be for both Green Acres and Rural Preserves going forward, and it's not just Rural Preserves, and I'm not sure if that was my understanding of the intent, but it's not clear that everybody picked up that that's also Green Acres going forward.
Yes. So, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Then I'm really against the five-year payback. I don't think we want to touch the actual Green Acres portion of this bill, and I would strongly encourage keeping that at 3 years.
And Representative Anderson, this was for anything, just for to clarify this was for anything that is enrolled after the agreed-upon date going forward. So it wouldn't be anything that was enrolled currently and prior to. So, and I think some of this during that discussion yesterday was, is there a workable solution here to address some of the concerns? And Representative Hansen made a great point yesterday when he gave the example how individuals will sell land up here, and the example that was made, and I've seen it, where those individuals would take those dollars and come down to my area and be purchasing land. So that's where some of the thought process was, you know, some of the thought was in designing this as well. Representative Vogel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would probably echo Representative Anderson's viewpoint on this thing. Coming from a real estate standpoint, we start throwing different years and amount of time periods out there all the time. Just makes it a little more confusing. I think if we keep it consistent with the three-year period, I think that's a better idea. So.
The other question I have for Mr. Hines is on page 2, line 2.4 through 2.5. What does that mean exactly? What does that accomplish? Can you clarify that, please?
Mr. Chair, that the lines you've just referenced are the lines that accomplish the 5 year for the Rural Preserve program. So the section on page 1 of the amendment that wraps over just onto the beginning of page 2, that's the Green Acres that we had to bring a new section into the bill because that was not already in the bill. But in the Rural Preserves, the section is already in there. We just needed to add a clause. And so it's just saying that the existing language says 2 years for and we add for property that had been rolled under Green Acres for payable 2011 or earlier, or 4 years prior. And the way that's the Rural Preserve section is, the reason it uses four prior years is it says the current year and plus two previous years, or in this case, four previous years. But anyway, this is accomplishing the same thing on Rural Preserves that Section 1 is accomplishing for Green Acres.
Thank you. Would
do we have any farm groups that would be interested in coming up and speaking to, you know, the three-year and the five-year? I know hearing the concerns around this and understanding that we're trying to find workable solutions and address all the concerns. Can you just offer us your perspectives, if you would, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris Raddatz, Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. And I want to compliment and congratulate the committee on doing some fine work and really trying to reach out and reach some compromise. And I fully understand Representative Hansen's concerns. I just, to be honest with you, we would prefer it to be one date and be consistent. We've taken a lot of time, committee time already, to explain the 5 and the 3 year difference. Well, now we're going to have to go out and explain to our members the difference between the two programs, even though it's for new property going forward. And I would submit that the fact that it has to be homesteaded property to qualify for rural preserve takes care of your concern, a lot of concerns about land speculation. The way we would view it, I don't know how many situations are out there where somebody is going to buy land for speculative purposes and homestead it. We think it gets covered, that concern is covered on the front end with the enrollment requirement. And that might be another way to look at it, I guess. So we fully understand compromise and the need to move forward, and we can support that, but we would prefer to have one number for both programs.
Duly noted. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Peterson with the Minnesota Farmers Union. I echo what Mr. Raddatz said, and I understand the reasons and the thoughts. We actually debated this at our convention quite at length when we were trying to decide what would our members like to see, and after quite a bit of debate, we ended on the 3 years just for consistency. Mr. Drood over here, too, just asked me if the people that got out of Green Acres now and were going to be going back in, I assume that they would have a 3 year payback, but there's a lot of those people too, and we would want to make sure that if this did go forward, you know, we'd want those people to have the 3 years too. And so that was just a concern I hadn't thought of here, but so we just would urge you for, you know, a lot of simplicity to keep it at 3 years.
So we have a few questions. Representative Morrow.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lemire, it's your bill, so I'll let you do this, but not everyone was in the working group discussion yesterday.
Yes.
You know, we heard about the desirability of keeping the 2A, 2B designations.
Yes.
We heard about the concerns about the covenant and about the management plan. Could you maybe just give, for all of us who are now at the table, what seemed to be the major concerns, the major factors that went into creating the DE1? Because I think it also touches on why the 3 years were extended to 5 years as sort of the trade-off for the covenant and the management plan. So could you maybe elaborate a little bit about where this bill is going?
Representative Lemire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Morrow. That's it? All right. We had discussion, you know, the first discussion was, you know, why can't we just have allow 2A and 2B land to be into Green Acres program? And then members from the Department of Revenue and the Assessor's Office didn't really like that idea because of all the work that they've already put involved into the process of separating the two lands. And then John from Department of Revenue also had a good idea that if you leave them separated, then you're not always digging into the big bill. You can go in there and you can mess with the 2B land or you can mess with the 2A land. It's for simplicity down the road, which right. made good sense. There was Representative Hansen brought up an issue of people selling their property and then moving up north and paying big bucks for land up north because they got huge money for selling their land down here, and they'll go up north and drive up the cost of market value up in the north, which made good sense. That's kind of how the discussion got started. With that being said, I also heard what the farmers, representatives from the farming industry said, and I do like the simplistic idea of it, and if if the homestead qualifications take care of your concerns, I would like to leave it at the 3 years. If it doesn't, then I'm open to further debate on the matter, but that's fine.
Well, thank you. I think, again, through this whole process, what we were talking about in the working group, everybody was, well, not everybody, excuse me, I'm going to back up. When we're hearing the testimony, when we're addressing the covenants, when we're addressing the plans, and where a lot of the controversy came in, that's where we agreed to eliminate those and bring everybody back to the 3 years that has been in the programs and eligible. With people on all sides of this issue, working with the members that had concerns that really supported the covenants and some of these other plans, working with them, and we understand how it works around here as well, looking for compromise, looking for, you know, bipartisan support, and working with that group yesterday, I felt that this was appeared to be a workable solution, at least one that we could it appeared to be a workable solution as far as long as it was upfront with individuals that would be enrolling into these programs moving forward, so it wasn't going back and having a knee-jerk reaction affecting people that have already been in there. So trying to offer simplicity, trying to offer consistency, and total transparency in the entire program, and also looking for, if you will, camaraderie and compromise on being able to find a workable solution. And that's where what I took away from this, and this is why I did move this amendment, is that as long as we are willing to gain the support on those compromises, on those areas that we just said, this would address and bring forth many others to support the changes in Green Acres by moving this to 5 years for anybody that was enrolling in the future. And granted, we don't have that date set in stone yet because we're still waiting for some feedback from others, other experts as well. But friends, that was the thought process as far as what we went through yesterday. Any thoughts or any additional comments from the members that were there? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. I think on the question of consistency, the way it's drafted, it is consistent with the status quo, and our intent is to protect those folks that are in it or who may have dropped off. And if we need to clarify people that were improperly removed or removed because they didn't have correct understanding of what was happening or whatever the problem was for proper enrollment, if they're able to be at three, that's the intent. And the idea of having it with being on 2A and 2B and rural preserves was for the consistency and to have the prospectivity so everybody who's coming in, they would be clearly knowledgeable of what it is when they make that decision to enroll, not on a decision to re-enroll, or not, but it's clearly for those folks that are coming forward in the future. If I listened to Mr. Raddatz's testimony clearly, and maybe I misunderstood it, but he said he understood the compromise and understood the idea for consistency, but they would prefer the three-year, and I think what I heard from Mr. Peterson clearly was they would prefer the three-year, but I didn't hear a direct we would oppose the five-year. Maybe I'm not hearing correctly, but I think that was the correct, my ears were correct on that. And so I would hope we could try to move this, you know, when we actually do take a vote. I think the goal here is to try to come together and prevent the unintended consequences in the land market and trying to help out family farmers. And so I would hope that we could keep that five-year and clarify if needed for those folks who may have been dropped out inadvertently.
Representative Hansen, may I ask a question? To the point where they're talking about the homestead and they felt that that was suitable to accomplish what it is that we're trying to accomplish. Do you have any thoughts on that? And if you'd like to pass, I respect that as well.
Mr. Chair, I think hearing testimony from the assessors and from the revenue department, when they were, I think revenue said they wanted to look at this piece a little bit, and maybe that's with the flurry of papers we've had, if they digest that and get back to us on impact of that, that would be helpful.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Bruce Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could have Mr. Raddatz come back up to the table, I'd love to just ask him a question.
Mr. Raddatz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for coming up, Mr. Raddatz. You mentioned that explaining the Green Acres program, I'm sure over the last 4 years, has been quite arduous and very, you felt like maybe they were going to hang you instead of the legislature. But how much grief do you think this is going to give this new language here? You mentioned Homestead. I like that idea. I think the Homestead has a kind of a definitive point whereby the people know that they're going to have to sign on a line, and that if they sell that homestead, they lose it. Mm-hmm. But what going forward here, trying to explain it, you say it's going to be, again, a difficult situation. At least that's what I heard. Give me some of your arguments that you're going to hear back from your members as you go out into the state.
Mr. Raddatz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson. Chris Raddatz. With Farm Bureau, I think it's going to be less difficult, to be quite honest with you, if it's clearly the new program versus the old program. The folks that are most concerned are the ones that were in the program and the changes occurred to it. There is still going to be some need to clarify and explain the program, but the distinction between existing people and new folks will help. But I, too, would like to hear a little bit more about this homestead issue from revenue when they have time to look at it. And that may clear up some things. It may still leave some holes that need to be plugged, because we certainly don't support changes that would allow the speculation that Representative Hansen is worried about. So, and you did hear correctly, we would prefer the 3 years. If it's the committee's will that we put the 5 years in, there's so many good parts to this bill, we're going to support that. So we're, I guess, having an opportunity to look at it further and just raise potential issues that we see. Everybody's life would be easier if it was one answer, but we're not paid for being easy sometimes. So
not in this profession. So
we could have the Department of Revenue come up.
All right, we've had a request for the Department of Revenue to address this, our concerns here.
Mr. Chair, again, my name is John Hagan. I'm the Director of Property Tax at the Department of Revenue. You know, when it comes right down to it, it's a policy decision. I certainly, from an administrator's perspective, you know, I'm inclined to agree with Mr. Hansen's concerns. Something that, as an administrator, rings real true with me is, particularly on a lot of the 2B lands, there'll be a lot of them being enrolled in rural preserve with these new changes. It'll make it much more acceptable, I think. And you need to not lose sight, although it is, again, a policy decision, but it's important not to lose sight, but the cost shift and the shift onto the local business people and residential homeowners is in the counties where the 2B expansions will start to occur as the rural lands start to increase in value again, the woodlands and the rural vacant lands. A five-year payment would also help when it goes back to the local jurisdiction, to help to make them more whole for sustaining that difference in taxes over that period of time. I certainly do respect what Mr. Raddatz is saying about how it is. In a lot of ways, it would be nice to make it very, very simple. The simpler you can make it, the better. But at the same time, I think we could do an effective job of saying, if you were in Green Acres in the past, or if you got out because of the law changes, these rules apply, and anybody who goes in now, anybody who enters after this point in time, these rules apply. So I think we could make that separation without too much trouble. So again, it becomes a sort of a policy issue, what you want to do, and if you feel it is important to differentiate between going forward to make sure that the people enrolled in getting this huge tax benefit in some cases have some skin in the game, and they are they have a commitment in to make the local jurisdiction more whole when they get out. That is, of course, your decision.
Okay. Thank you. We do have a number of questions. First, I have Representative Paul Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Putting my farmer hat on here and talking just, I guess, about the Green Acres portion, I think the average age of farmers is 58, 59, 60 years old, somewhere in there. So for a farmer looking at possibly going into this program from this point going forward and having to plan for keeping it for 5 years without making any changes as far as he may want to retire and sell in a couple of years, I think 5 years is too long for the Green Acres portion of it. And, you know, looking at the real world side of this, there could be some huge paybacks that farmers are going to have to pay back after 5 years. And I just think that 3 years is sufficient.
We have Representative Vogel.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, as long as we're putting on hats, I'll put on my realtor hat today. And speaking from a realtor standpoint, you know, we have to deal with a lot of regulations and a lot of differences in not only ag land, but we look at in residential, commercial, and all this stuff. And so this, you know, this is just another piece of the pie that just seems to get spewed all over. We'd like to see it stay consistent, and let's keep it at 3 years. Keep it consistent across the board. And I would like to ask if we have representatives from the Minnesota Association of Realtors here, and I'd like them to speak to it, too, if they would.
Before we move there, we do have a few other questions on after the last testimony. So we have Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry for my voice. My question is, you know, we're looking at the dates and the speculatory nature of land purchases. How would this affect, you know, if a sale of ground would be in, if we're to set a five-year date, if the sale was caused by distress, you know, would that add something on, you know, if before the 5 years someone enrolled and due to, you know, the volatility in the market or something happened with the business that a sale had to occur, would then, you know, would there be some, maybe a, you know, an opt-out if that was the situation so that we're not also, you know, adding some insult to injury of someone that was looking to participate in the program?
So who would like to, who would be best suited to field that question, I guess? Mr. Hines?
Well, Mr. Chair, my understanding is that there is no provision in either the Green Acres or the Rural Preserves right now for any kind of a hardship situation, but I guess the department would be better to say finally if there was anything like that.
And I see the department moving forward.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Hagan with the department. There is nothing currently that provides for a crisis or some sort of a need in the family. A couple things to remember, too, that I should have probably been more clear on. It has occurred to me when I always get smarter when I get back to my seat, that that the payment would never exceed the number of years enrolled. So to Representative Anderson's question, if a farmer in the later years was getting into the program and only stayed in 2 or 3 years, you'd never pay the 5 years. You'd only pay the years of the benefit you had up to the 5 years if you were to go that way. And additionally, if you sell the property to another qualifying farmer, the Green Acres portion would continue. There would be no payment at all. It's just you only have a payback if it goes to a non-qualifying use. So that is another issue. But with respect to your direct question, there is no provision for a family crisis that I'm aware of.
Thank you. Representative Swazinski, a follow-up?
No.
All right. Thank you. Representative Anderson, Bruce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hagan, the criteria for homesteading a piece of property, is there any negative factor or anything in the homesteading law that says that if, you know, I guess that's basically what I have to say. Negative? Is there any negative impact on the homestead or the criteria that has a drawback? Sagan.
Mr. Chair, Representative, not that I can think of. It's and the homestead is so expansive. In fact, if this committee ever was interested, we'd be happy to come and give a presentation on ag homestead and the incredible complexities of it. And one of the problems that we're having with administering as property tax administrators is as the ways of corporately owning farms changes and farmers are holding it differently, the legislature tries to react to make certain they are included within the homestead, and then we react. So it gets more and more complex all the time. We've got an amazing flow chart that explains homesteads that I'm no longer capable of to understanding, but you, some of you in this room may be, but it's an amazing thing. I think there's would be no downside to the homestead provision.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson,
there is no KISS method.
Mr. Chair, that was lost many, many years ago with respect to ag homesteads.
Representative Anderson. Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that we sometimes I feel like we need to address the policy and purpose of the legislation first and then determine what's necessary to accomplish those purposes. And if the purpose is to preserve farmland, there does have to be, I think, a significant disincentive to selling that farmland for development purposes. Now, we might determine that that's not one of the purposes. I think first and foremost, the purpose is to help farmers continue to farm and not, you know, taxing them off their land. But again, if you want to preserve that farmland, you have to go beyond just that. And I think that's what Representative Hansen is trying to do. And I do think we need to have some discussion about what is the purpose. And the legislative auditor's report did say that we are not accomplishing the purpose of preserving farmland adequately. It's not really doing that. And I think one of the problems is that there's not a real great disincentive to selling land to developers. Again, I think we need to address that issue. And I think that should be stated in the legislation. I think people should know what the legislation's goals are. And whether those goals are being accomplished, and you know, we do know that this is really shifting tax burdens, you know, onto those within the jurisdiction that don't benefit from the program, and I think they have a right to know too what they're getting in return for paying those higher taxes. Are they getting what they're being told they're getting? Are they getting and again, they may be fine with just saying, well, it's an issue of tax equalization. We want those farmers that are currently farming to be able to stay there as long as they want. But then the question goes to next, do you want that land to stay in farming indefinitely? If you do, then you need something along the lines of what Representative Hansen wants. So I'd like to open it up, I guess, some to what is the purpose, too.
So, and Representative Eakin, that's the A2 and A3 amendment, and maybe I should have brought those forward first. However, we're still on the A1 amendment, sure. So... if you could bear with us, sure. And we'll come back to that if you would, if that would be okay. We did have a request from Representative Vogel. If we could have a member from the realtors come up to answer the question or to address the comment that Representative Vogel raised.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Egger, Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Association of Realtors, and thank you to Representative Vogel for inviting us up to testify. We just would like to echo a lot of the discussion that's been happening for the last 20 minutes or so and the testimony of both Mr. Peterson and Mr. Raddatz. You know, our preference is, again, from a simplicity standpoint, that there be one date and that be the three-year look-back period. I just throw out another example of... perhaps the complexity that's caused if you have a 3 and a 5, and you've discussed in the past few minutes that for current enrollees having a 3 is consistent, and for anybody that would come in afterward having a 5-year period would be consistent. But if you have farmers, say, in the same area, it gets confusing. If you have different enrollees having different time periods, becomes just the complexity of explaining why somebody is on one term and why another farmer is on a different term. It does add another layer of complexity. With that, we certainly understand that you're trying to strike a balance, and as Representative Eakin pointed out, having a discussion about the purpose of the legislation, what you're trying to accomplish, But we just wanted to add our comments to those that you've heard today about having a consistent time period. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll keep my comments brief.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Seeing none. Thank you. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Egger. I think as you heard, the covenant, which was prospective, looking at trying to keep the land, that there would be an agreement by the landowner. The landowner may not be a farmer. It's the landowner. So a landowner could be anyone who's enrolled, may not be actively engaged in farming, may not be on the land, could be me. So with this, the DE1, we're removing the covenant, which we heard was onerous. We had testimony on one of the earlier days, somebody wanted a 30-year covenant because they saw people departing. So the covenant is removed in this DE1. We heard testimony about the conservation plan, which was an intent to get people engaged in managing their property. The best intent, that didn't work out as well either. People just like that. So the conservation plan is gone. And we've heard testimony now from the revenue department that with those things gone and with equal opportunity to enroll, when you look at the map and you have counties where there's not much green acres, you'll probably get more counties where there is green acres, and so you have new tax shifts that will occur. New people will be paying more taxes in those areas where there hasn't been a lot of green acres and where there may be appreciation of land values, whether it's in the Northwest or the Southwest or wherever. So some disincentive to reduce that tax shift and to keep farmers on the land. That was why we were proposing the 5 years. So do you have any insight? We're in a slow economy right now, but on the value of recreational property when things start going and when people have the money to spend.
Mr. Chairman, Representative yes. Hansen, boy, that's a big issue for us to address here in Ag Committee. I would say that you raise a number of very important policy issues that this committee, and I assume Tax Committee, and the full legislature are going to be grappling with throughout the session. But from our perspective, listening to the discussion here today, 3 versus 5, one time frame versus having a bifurcated system, we felt that it was important to weigh in what we think is the value of having one consistent time frame throughout the legislation. And I know that's not a direct answer to your question, but I think a lot of the issues you raise are weighty tax issues that I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to discuss more fully in the Tax Committee.
Representative Hansen. Representative Anderson, Bruce.
Thank you. We talked about the covenants being now with this amendment or the delete all amendment going away. Does that mean that someone who wants a covenant can't get one? Or is there a benefit to the covenant from a tax purposes more so than what you would get then from a 3-year? I mean, if they came in with a covenant, and I don't know, I'm not a tax person, maybe have to ask the department to come back up and ask about that, but would there be an incentive for someone to take a covenant on their own, and would that, I mean, that'd be over and above what the green acres would be if there's a certain time, and I don't know the answer to that.
So, Mr. Eggert, you want to give us your perspective, and we'll ask the department.
Mr. Chairman,
to come up
I think Representative Anderson made a good point. I think the Department of Revenue would be better situated to answer that question.
Very well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Hagan.
Mr. Chair, John Hagan. If an individual entered into a perpetual covenant limiting the use of the property, it would in fact impact the value of the property going forward, so that the highest and best use of the value could never exceed the market value of what the covenant restricted it to. So if for instance, you had a covenant and the things that were driving the land were development or urban sprawl or who knows what, and they put a covenant on the land, if a property owner put a covenant on the land that precluded any development or any construction of any structures, it would limit the highest and best use, the market value the assessor would be aiming for to the use of that value. So it would, in fact, perpetually reduce the value of the property. And how much would be dependent on the circumstances, and of course, it would be a corresponding tax savings based on the diminishment of value.
Representative Anderson.
Follow-up. So, Mr. Hagan, does the covenant have a certain time period of, say, I mean, if I say I want to have a covenant, can I designate a 5-year or a 3-year or a 10-year or whatever, and can I then, in the same sense, get in and out of it, or once I make the designation, it's set for that time period, or is there something already in statute that says covenants are 8 years?
Sagan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, you could have a covenant for any period of time you wanted, the property owner wanted. However, for the value to be affected, in my opinion, it has to be a perpetual or at least a very long-term covenant. A 5- or 10-year covenant would not affect the value.
Representative Anderson, follow up.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm looking at the overall, if there was some kind of incentive for someone who wanted to put a covenant in place, and you're saying 10 years at least, if we could, as the legislature put it in statute, to say, if you sign onto a covenant along with the Green Acres, there would be whatever. I don't know what that would be, but we're trying to make Green Acres stay at a 3-year. At least that's what I'm hearing people here at the table say. Some people want to go to the 5-year, and I'm just saying, if people take the covenant and make that, if there's a farmer wants to keep it in the farm for as long as his grandchildren and great-grandchildren are still alive, they can make a 20-year covenant, and that looks like that would be something. But there should be some kind of incentive then to keep that, and I understand where it impacts the tax rate for everybody surrounding that area and for the taxes that are dealing there, but there has to be a reason to want to go in that direction and not to have that. So I'm just talking off the top of my head here, but
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, you certainly could do that as a legislature. Be advised that you'd run into some buzzsaws along the way.
yes, we will.
One thing that you do not want to lose sight of, though, with respect to your question, is if a person wants to keep farming and handing it down to their children and grandchildren, on and on and on, it will always stay in Green Acres. There will never be a payback under current law.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to respond to Representative Anderson, there is another tool, and that's what we did in Dakota County, where we went to the voters and asked them if they wanted to raise their property taxes to protect farmland, and they said yes. And they said yes in 2002, and there was extensive citizen involvement with the farm community, with folks, and so it was 50% farmland protection, 50% environmental protection, targeting and working with voluntary landowners, and so people entered into a farmland protection program paid for by the property taxpayers of Dakota County who voted to do it. And I know this because I chaired the campaign. But it worked, and it was collaborative, and it's another tool beyond the tax issue if to protect farmland. So the best land to protect in terms of preserving it for agriculture, which is a little different than some of the other land acquisitions that are occurring. This is one to keep things farming. And so people did volunteer and have enrolled in that, and then they are paying lower property taxes, but they are still paying some rather than having the state buy it. And following that, there are other counties. I know in Stearns County they've discussed this over and over. Washington County did pass something similar. Carver and Scott had talked about it, but when I back the other day, I said there are a variety of tools if you want to keep farmers on the land and keep farmland there. And I think that's one other tool that combines taxes and choice and keeps it in private ownership.
Any other questions or comments to the A1 amendment? Members, I think I did have some questions. The department was going to get back to us on the dates and a few others. So I think at this time what I'm going to do is I'm going to withdraw the A1 amendment so we can fully vent this and give the department and others a chance to address this as well. And maybe there's some others out there that would like to touch base with their membership. and you've heard the testimony, and we're seeking advice. So we'll take this up at a later time as well. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I know you've got a couple other amendments, but there's another question. I just walked up in the audience. I've asked Mr. Sullivan as well. We're trying. Here's my question that we need to get an answer to. If someone has already enacted a covenant, and my understanding, talking to the assessors, there are some people who have already done it, or if somebody has already initiated a plan, would that covenant and or plan still be in effect if this bill is passed? And I understand we're going to get an answer to that, unless somebody's prepared to answer that right now. My understanding was that's an unanswered question.
That is a great question. Is there somebody that from the department or others would like to address that now, or would you rather go back and look into that and provide the answer at a later time?
Mr. Chair, Representative, let me do both. My best guess now is that you would probably want to have a provision that anybody who entered into a covenant could get at their option to stay in or get out. I'm guessing there'd be no benefit staying in, so I would guess the legislation would likely or properly include, given the direction you seem to be going, all the covenants would be canceled and they'd no longer be bound by that covenant. But I will follow up on that, too.
All right. Thank you. And if I could ask Mr. Hines to make a note of that as well. Thank you. Samara? Okay. Well, let's move to, I do have a number of other questions that some members raised as well that I'd like to get answers to. But before we do that, let's go back to what Representative Eakin talked about. It's about the purpose. We had an extensive discussion on this yesterday and prior to this as well. So we did draft, working with Mr. Hines. I offered up a couple suggestions to take a look at. And what I would first like to discuss, I think, will be the A2 amendment. I'm going to move the A2 amendment so we can get it before us and we can discuss this. And Representative Eakin, to your point, the only thing, well, first of all, the only thing different between the A2 and the A3 amendment is that it actually spells out on line 1.6, the law is to preserve agriculture land, and then rolls into the other things that we're talking about, and to allow farmers to continue to farm in circumstances where the land is subject to market pressures that would otherwise make it impossible to maintain a viable farming operation due to excessive properties. Again, the only difference between the A2 and the A3 amendment is the one before us, the A2, has the law is to preserve agriculture land, and I wanted to bring that before us for discussion. So, so yes, Representative Anderson, it's the A2 amendment. And again, the reason we brought this forward is because this was debated at great lengths, I feel, prior to this, and Representative Eakin brought this up here today. So we have it before us, and I guess I'm looking for comments, suggestions. Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I am generally in favor of a purpose-type statement, so I thank you and Representative Eakin for bringing it forward. Just in first blush, one question I would have in talking to some folks right before the meeting, it'd be the word viable on line 1.8. And whether the word viable is needed, maybe there could be some discussion on why the word viable has been included in the purpose statement. It could limit it to a determination of who's viable and who's not.
Sure. That's a great point. Mr. Hines, I gave you some suggestions, to that point, do you have any thoughts? Is that do you feel comfortable? Otherwise, if not, we can discuss this internally as well, or with the members as well.
Mr. Chair, this was done in a fairly short term, and I didn't put a lot of thought into it. I tried to reflect what I thought I heard come up at the working group, but I don't have a real strong opinion about that word, and you didn't express, I don't know if you particularly mentioned that word yourself. Somebody had it. I just picked it up.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Hines. Oh, Mr. Reinholz, do you have any comments to that?
Mr. Chairman, I do wonder about using the not necessarily the viable. The viable does make some sense to me to take that word, limit that, but also saying that it is subject to market pressures. You're saying all market pressures. Is that Green Acres Law, does that actually apply to all market pressures, or just ones that are specified in commercial law?
Mr. Hines.
The law does specify all non-agricultural market pressures, so it is not limited to development, even though that's the main one, but the law simply says non-agricultural pressures.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Reynolds.
Maybe you do want it in the meeting, but the use of the term excessive property taxes, isn't it really what you're saying is that in a positive statement would perhaps be through tax equalization worked into there rather than excessive property taxes? I'm not quite sure you want to get into the purpose having a discussion of what is or isn't excessive. The main statute actually says how to deal with the equalizing taxes. You're getting into a totally bigger question, I think, with that term, excessive property taxes. Okay. I'm not quite sure how I would do that, but I did just see this amendment in committee, and I apologize to Mr. Hines if I'm putting more pressure on him to write language in committee, which I personally know is difficult to do.
So, well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, on that point, I was wondering about impossible being like infinity. You know, that there could be one. And then trying to find language that makes that the neutral language rather than impossible to get to the same intent. If we've got more time, Mr. Hines, I know, is very talented and can write it so it's legislative ease correctly.
Well, this is the purpose. Absolutely, this is the purpose. And we have, first of all, we have Representative Franzen, did you have a question? Oh. Did you get a pen?
I did.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering about deleting everything from allow farmers to continue to farm, period. Just the purpose of the law is to preserve agricultural land and to allow farmers to continue to farm.
So,
that's a suggestion.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for that suggestion. Absolutely. And Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I also saw that same word as Representative Hansen about impossible. And I read that to mean that impossible meaning the negative cash flow, impossible to make a viable or a farming operation. I think that kind of limits us as to what we mean by impossible. And are we talking negative cash flows? And sometimes those are different from year to year.
That's right. That's right. So I guess I have two questions for the committee. One would be going back to one would be the purpose. If the committee is thinking that it's a good idea to actually spell that out, that would be my first question. My second question is the purpose of this to preserve agriculture land? And the reason I want to just put that up in front of the members as well, because if that is the purpose, and if Green Acres is not in someone's mind achieving that goal, then is the entire Green Acres program in jeopardy, in question? And so that's what I wanted to raise. I guess that's my point. So, Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, I think as far as the purpose, I think first and foremost, the purpose has always been to help farmers. The second part of the amendment here, which is to help farmers who would otherwise find it impossible, maybe we could put the words exceedingly difficult or something along those lines, would be a little more flexibility there. But I think that is first and foremost. I know you read a note at the working group as well that I think Mr. Schreiber had provided. He was in the legislature at the time this was being put together, and that was being discussed as the primary objective here. I think a spinoff of that is, you know, preserving agricultural land, but I think that it's virtually impossible to preserve farmland, especially in high-growth areas like around the cities, where eventually the development just overwhelms it. So in some ways I feel that it's an unattainable goal in some places for the long term I'm talking about. I know in the short term you can always preserve the farmland for as long as the farmer continues farming. But I wonder sometimes if we're setting up a goal that's not achievable, if we're saying you know, indefinitely into the future for forever, that that land is going to remain in farming. And I think it is important that we talk about the purpose, and I'm glad that, you know, that we put the other amendment on hold for now, because I think that other amendment does tie into what we see as the purpose here. You know, whether we should move forward with making the disincentive stronger for selling land to developers. I think a lot of that depends on whether we think the purpose is to preserve the farmland for as long as possible. The disincentive needs to be there then. So.
Thank you. Members, I have a couple questions, and we do have a request from another person who would like to come up and testify to this point. So I'll take the next two questions. Representative Hansen, do you have a question? Okay. Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on the two amendments, the A2 or the A3.
We are on the A2.
We're working off the A2, okay.
Yes.
Just a suggestion, just because, you know, the words impossible and viable and excessive are very subjective and open to interpretation. Just a recommendation off the top of my head would be to, after pressures of 1.8, add unrelated to agriculture, and then just delete the rest. So it would say that allow farmers to continue to farm in circumstances where the land is subject to market pressures unrelated to agriculture. And I think that covers a much broader aspect, whether it's recreation, whether it's development pressures, or anything like that. And then we don't have to worry about the other subjective terms that are open to interpretation.
So thank you. What I think what we'd like to do then is, I've seen Mr. Hines is making notes, and we'll continue having this discussion here. But I think what we'll end up doing, Mr. Hines, you have a comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I was just going to point out that there already is a subdivision in the Green Acres Law that's called public policy, and I did not choose to amend that. I just added another subdivision called purpose. But arguably, these two are accomplishing the same thing. And this public policy, which I can read if we want to, it addresses the equalization point that Mr. Reinholz was making earlier. And the legislative auditor talked about it as the only purpose that is actually mentioned in this equalizing tax burdens upon agricultural property. So in some ways, that concept is already in the law, and you know, it may not be totally clear whether adding that, you know, another purpose clause that sort of makes that point in a different way is of use. The thing that's not in this public the policy statement there is the preserving ag land, and that's kind of, I think, you might want to think about that in this discussion.
All right. Thank you. At this time, I'd like to call down to testify Mr. Ron Drood. Did I get that name right? And sir, please state your name.
My name, for the record, my name is Ron Drood, D-R-U-D-E. And I live in farm in Isani County. I had a very minor role in the original legislation in the 60s, and I followed it and I participated in the program since that date. I can tell you that the intent of the original Green Acres legislation was to preserve farms and farmers. Now, that is not the same as preserving farmland, because you could, in fact, have a scenario where you preserved all the farmland and made it physically or economically impossible to farm. I would like to have you keep that in mind. I should also add that when I was involved in this legislation in the 60s, I was only 7 years old. So. The other point of this, and that, okay, that preserving the farm also goes to this idea that you heard that was testified to in previous legislatures about a farm is a farm is a farm, and trying to chop it up into pieces of A, B, C, and D isn't necessarily helpful to the farmer. The other part of, and I apologize for not being here on Tuesday, I was out of town. The other part of the legislation that was conceived to be very, very important in the 60s to preserving farms, and by the way, this essentially started in Wright County. There were Wright County farmers that were being, their existence was being threatened by development. particularly because they were talking about extending utilities, sewer and water utilities, through those farms to accommodate development, and those farms would then be assessed for the, even though they had no benefit, direct benefit from those utilities. And I haven't heard any discussion at all about assessments. And they can be as deadly, and as proposed, for example, that that assessments become due and payable, or they used to come due and payable upon sale or transfer of the farm. That actually is a death knell for the farm right there. If you have to pay up those assessments, you're not you're going to have to sell it for some other purpose. So to those ends, when you consider purpose, the other thing in with respect to former Senator Jean Merriam, who lamented the demise of the preamble. Legislation used to be accompanied with what essentially was a cover letter or a cover sheet called a preamble that talked to the purpose of the legislation. In an economy move of saving paper or something, that was eliminated over a decade ago, but it certainly would have come to the fore today. Thank you. If you have any questions, I'd be delighted to attempt to answer them.
Any questions for the testifier? No. So you are a very wise 7-year-old. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, excuse me. We do have a question. Representative Anderson.
Sir, do you recall, I know 7 years, and that's quite a few years ago, but do you recall who the gentleman was that brought forth the language for Green Acres? Was he from Wright County? Because it was Wright County as far as the issue being concerned.
I know it was the events that were happening in Wright County that brought it to the legislature's attention. Who the actual authors of the legislation were or are, I don't know. But I would think that this should be retrievable, although I asked people to try to retrieve the preamble to the original legislation in the two previous sessions, and no one could seem to find it, although that seemed to suit another agenda at the time as well. But people might make an effort to do that, or possibly the representatives or senators from the Wright County area might have that. I unfortunately destroyed my own files about 5 years ago, thinking I'll never need this stuff again. So.
Thank you, Mr. Drew. Yeah, thank you. So, any other thoughts or ideas on the purpose statement that we could offer up additional suggestions to Mr. Hines and take this up later as well? Any other thoughts? Okay. So, members, what I'd like to do then, it was a great discussion. I'd like to withdraw this amendment as well, temporarily withdraw that amendment, and we can continue that discussion with Mr. Hines and others, right? I think we have some good feedback that we can go on there. Right? Any questions? Is there any other amendments that have been offered up? No. So, Representative Eakin and to everybody here, what I would like to do then, and with everybody's permission and support, if you will, we have the bill in the form that the author would like. We have that before us. We have a couple questions. One would be on the proposal that I brought forth in that amendment about the 5-year and the date. And I'd like to continue that discussion and have the department and others get back to us and weigh in on that, the assessors as well, as far as those dates. Is there anything else on that specific piece that we need clarification on from anybody's perspective? The other one would be on the purpose. We had great dialogue there, and so Mr. Hines, you took some notes, I believe, and yes, sir, if you'd like to comment on that.
I was just going to remind us that there is the one other issue, too, that was raised about the people with existing covenants that we were going to look into and see if we might need some amendment on that.
Yes, and you'll be willing to help us out on that.
Yes, and we'll be looking for the department for suggestions there or what they think. Yes.
All right. Thank you. I do have a couple questions that were brought up that were passed to me. We have a few more minutes here. One was that an individual brought to me, they said, I think it's critical, and I believe as well, that we get all stakeholders on board, assessors, the farm groups, Farmers Union, Farm Bureau. Of course, we want to make sure that you understand where we're going with this. We have it fully vented, and we definitely want to hear from you. No question about it. We want to make sure that we fully vent this. Another one on here, another county, was the registration date. That's what we just talked about on that amendment when we were looking at bringing that up to the 5 years. So that one has been addressed. That one is addressed as well. It was brought up that in the event the property was purchased for a public purpose, in the event the property was purchased for a public purpose, would that clawback be in effect? Would it apply? Because the argument was, if you're purchasing it for a public purpose and using taxpayer dollars, are you using tax dollars to pay back that clawback? So would anybody like to comment on that? Or Representative Hansen.
Well, Mr. Chair, so the clawback goes back to the property tax issue, though. So if you do have if you do have investment from the public from legacy dollars or trust fund dollars or those are dollars that are coming in not for the and we're struggling with the issue of PILT on this very question as well to make up for the loss of property tax dollars. So I understand about public dollars going back in there, but that may, you had public dollars that were reduced, or you had private dollars that were reduced for property taxes, a property tax loss. So the compensation may need to be there if the same compensation is needed for PILT.
Okay. Thank you. What I'd like members to do is think about that one as well. All right. And I will, in addition, and if we need to bring up an amendment to address that. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I appreciate the way you've run the meeting today and that we're going to get a little more information. And I'm sure this is inherent in what you're saying, but if the department or others have information, as soon as they get it, they should get it to us, because rather than wait till testify Tuesday with responses.
Thank you, Representative Morrow, without a doubt. That is an order. No, I'm teasing. I'm just teasing. I'm only teasing a little bit, all right? Only teasing. All right. And the same thing, too. If after today's discussion, if anybody has additional amendments, the sooner we can get them in front of all of us so we can mull this over. And like I said at the beginning of this, it's our intent to fully vent this the best that we possibly can, because it's been pretty controversial, to say the least. So that's why we've slowed down a great deal, trying to, like I said, get all the questions answered. The other thing that we'd like to do on Tuesday is just talk about, once again, we talked about this off record, but once again, defining a farm, if you will, if a person had, you know, horses per se, I'd just like to touch base on that and have a little more discussion and clarification on Tuesday. So be thinking about, you know, the definition of who qualifies and stuff so we can address that, okay? Any other comments? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did talk to Representative Detmer about the issue of the horse, and supposedly, and I think we brought it up on the House floor, and we brought it through our committees and all that. And from what he was telling me is that issue of a horse farmer has been clarified as being agriculture in nature, and that we shouldn't have to have too much more discussion about that, but no reason why we can't bring it up. But he thought that it was kind of behind us.
Okay, if it's behind us, we don't have to bring it up. So thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious if you think we should be putting all of today's paperwork in our save pockets, or is it all going to be redone by Tuesday?
So You know, I think it would be best if we would actually redo it, because we've had a number of changes. The author, we've had a couple amendments, technical and otherwise, to your bill. We'll take care of that. There's two other bills there. I stated at the beginning, before I address that, I guess we still have the bill before us. I think the proper motion would be that we're not going to move it. So I'm just going to hold it over, and we'll pick it up on Tuesday. All right. So to the other two bills, then, to the other two bills, what the intent is with those two, I've talked to the authors, and we're working off of Representative Lemire's bill. They've agreed to that. Those two bills, we will take those up, and we'll hold them over for possible inclusion. We'll keep them in our committee, if you will. So, but we'll do that at a later date, or do that on Tuesday as well. So, Representative Lemire, do you have any closing comments before we roll this over to Tuesday?
Mr. Chair, I just want to say thank you to you and the committee for all your insight and the new ideas that you brought forth.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Do you need me to make a motion or anything like that?
No.
All right.
Nope. Just need you to be quiet so we can move on. I'm teasing. You're a freshman. Some of that's, you have it coming. I'm just teasing. All right. With that, meeting adjourned.